I think one of the big challenges with generalist AI is that people just don't even know what they don't know on how to use this, how it can be useful, what part of their workflows it can apply to.
Welcome to the AI Advantage, where modern leaders decode the future of tech. I'm Solomon Williams, founder of Solonox. So here, it's no noise, no hype every week. Sometimes it's just me, and sometimes it's the brightest minds in tech, breaking down what it really takes to grow smarter with AI and automation. Let's dive in.
Welcome to AI Advantage. I'm your host, Solomon Williams. So we have a special guest today. We have Tim Libman. He's the co-founder and CEO of Clyde AI. So Tim, so much. It's really good having you. How are you doing today?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on.
Good, man. Yeah. So for the audience and so forth else, just to have everyone kind of get introduced, can you tell us a little bit about like your little bit on your background? Where did, you know, Clyde AI come from? And, you know, what are you looking to accomplish from?
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, a little bit on me. So I kind of like to say that I reluctantly grew up in big tech because I've been around since sort of the collaboration software industry started. And so I started out, you know, trying to convince people to be on audio and web conferencing calls instead of meeting in person. That's sort of how dated I am in this space. And, you know, I was at WebEx that got bought by Cisco, found myself working for big Cisco, and then, you know, didn't really want to be at that size of organization, wanted to affect some more change. So ended up joining SuccessFactors to help them build out their enterprise social networking business. And they got bought by SAP like 9 months in. And so then I found myself working at SAP, also sort of big tech, and then really decided at that point that I really wanted to go into, you know, like a true startup. And so then I went along and joined a startup called Think Tank. And that's really where I spent eight years really, really kind of growing up. And Think Tank ultimately got acquired in 2021 by Accenture. And so it was me and three guys running Think Tank. And what Think Tank was is Think Tank was a structured collaboration tool that was used by the largest consulting firms in the world to run and power their client engagements, client workshops. And since I had sort of grown up in the collaboration industry, what was really interesting to me about Think Tank, which is really relevant to what I'm doing now, hence the backstory, is it was really the evolution of not just using collaboration to connect people remotely, but really trying to get a group from an idea to an outcome, right? And sort of in a very structured way, guiding the facilitation of how people make decisions and align. And so ultimately, when Think Tank got acquired in 2021, I operated as a partner at Accenture for about 4 years. And then I really got to see and understand the deep underbelly of consulting and the nuts and bolts of how it really works. And this is right when, you know, Gen AI started to hit the scene. So now we're in kind of 2022, 2023. And what I realized was that, you know, one of the challenges I had when I was running Think Tank was that you still needed the very human heavy work of someone to go in and really structure and design these client engagements and workshops, you know, synthesize large amounts of information. And then there was always these poor analysts that were up to like 2-3 in the morning pulling together like PowerPoints, deliverables. And then it sort of dawned on me, like, what if with, you know, how accelerated AI is now, what if you could build a tool on an AI workflow that basically powered all of these activities that consultants have to go through, everything from designing and planning out a consulting project through to selling it, through to actually going through the steps of delivering it and aligning with the client. What if an AI could do a lot of that heavy lifting that historically has been such an expensive process and part of the workflow? And then it turned out that was possible. And so, you know, sort of was able to validate that hypothesis and then launched Clyde, which is the way I think about Clyde is it's the sort of the future of collaboration in the age of AI. So it's an AI native collaboration tool that allows anyone to show up with a problem, you know, and that problem could be anything from, I need to improve a certain process, or my organization's going through a bunch of change. And then Clyde works with you and allows you to bring in both AI advisors, so actual AI expertise, and humans to sort of collaborate together in one workplace to ultimately achieve whatever outcome it is you're trying to drive. And the people that feel that pain the most today just happen to be consultants. And so that's sort of really the initial group we're trying to serve with Clyde. But broader, from a vision standpoint, I see a world where Clyde could actually help democratize consulting for anyone that needs expertise and needs to solve a problem. And so I guess last little piece to wrap up the introduction part here is, you know, we launched this product in April, it's about 6 weeks ago, up to about 1,500 signups as of today. And we're seeing, you know, most of those users are consultants, but we're also seeing, you know, a small group of people have access to expertise now through Clyde that have never been able to access consulting before, including like third grade teachers that are going in and saying, like, I need to improve my curriculum to better serve my students. And a third grade teacher can't really afford to pay McKinsey like $500,000. And so I'm seeing this really interesting, almost unintended outcome of not just powering the professional consultants, but also kind of broad vision, trying to almost empower the world to get access to expertise and enhanced sort of outcomes. So yeah, that's a little bit about me and what I'm building.
Yeah. And I think, cause it's kind of funny, cause I did solutions engineering with our Accenture as well. And then before that was with, that was before Solenox and so forth else. I was with consulting, but the main thing of what you're saying is still on, when we get to these clients, whenever they pass through on discovery phase and we're pitching, we still have to kind of look through on how, from us as a, on the cloud side for the CSP, for whether it's Azure, or Google or AWS, still putting together what architecture we need to have for this. And there's so much collaboration and really how we can be able to synthesize, do the right presentations for the PowerPoint, what's it going to solve. So I like on how the Clyde AI, because it's really taking specific agentic roles, I guess you could say, for that, and really helps to build out, to your point, to where you're wanting to make sure on the analyst side, are we matching what the client needs? Are we not having it to where it's not templatized, but the agents is, from my understanding, what you think is making it more customized and making sure, are we actually solving the pain point? Is that what you think?
Yeah. And I think the other really important piece that I've seen is, I think one of the challenges with people that are building an AI overall right now is they're trying to power entire workflows agentically. And one thing that I realized is there are still things that happen in the workflows that are absolutely dependent on human beings. Sure. And it's not just the human in the loop stuff that you hear about, right? Where a human needs to be in the loop to make sure the AI is not going crazy. It's deeper than that. It's certain things across the workflow, AI can do extremely well. And when you can bring in these AI advisors within Clyde that have specific domain knowledge and expertise to help you along the workflow. But there are still things that need to happen where a human being has tribal knowledge or institutional knowledge in their heads that are required as input to be able to solve a problem. You need a UX that can surface and extract that information out from those people. Until you automate CEOs and leadership teams, people still need to be involved to make decisions, right? To drive change. And so you still need, again, a UX that allows for the collaboration and input and alignment from all these people as part of that process. And so that's really what we've set out to do, is really tried to create a place that combines human and AI expertise in a very collaborative way that sort of helps you get to your outcome.
I think it's you hear so much on the adoption of AI, but there's still this, on a change management side, it seems like there's still some friction in between. So with you coming on now as being the co-founder, now CEO, you're leading this in terms of on the consulting side. What are you seeing on the leadership side, like of where those frictions are? Is it just on how to implement, or are they just thinking that AI can just be ran across the whole organization without understanding of how the employees are digesting it and how they should champion it? What have you seen thus far too?
Yeah, I mean, I've engaged with a number of senior leaders, and then obviously I'm running Clyde and my team myself as well. And what I'm really seeing is that I think there is a confusion and almost a step that's being missed a little bit around being very intentional around what are the capabilities that need to, that the humans, the team, the actual team members, that they need to have to effectively adopt AI, right? And so one thing that has sort of mildly frustrated me a little bit with the big foundation models out there, right? Like, you know, Claude and ChatGPT and that, is they have this promise where they're saying, you know, SaaS is dead because SaaS was forcing users to conform to their UX paradigms. We're going to allow you to communicate naturally with us as LLMs, and we'll do the heavy lifting in terms of understanding what you're trying to achieve and what you're trying to get. But then now everyone suddenly has to learn new skills around like prompt engineering, context engineering. And I don't think people have understood that there's still a massive change management and training effort to make people AI native in how they communicate with LLMs to best get the right outcome, and not just sit there and burn like millions of tokens, like not knowing exactly what it is you're trying to do. And so another thing we are doing in Clyde to help solve for that is Clyde has a guided and very natural way of extracting the intent and the context from the user in a way that the traditional LLM models are still not doing very well. And so I think back to your question on what do leaders need to be doing to help their people implement AIs, they need to be giving them the right tools and training so that they can actually get maximized results with AI. I think one of the many stories I've heard from consultants on the ground is that they're leaders are saying, you have to be 10x more productive. We're going to monitor if you're using AI or not. And if you're not, you're fired, you know, and all these sort of almost draconian type measures. Right. But then the consultants on the ground are having to take legacy tools that they've been using, like say Mural, if you've heard of those kind of tools. And then they're having to take that plus AI. And then they're having to literally puzzle together themselves the solution that's going to make them 10x more productive, which just causes a lot of friction and pain for them. And so I think leaders need to do a better job of enabling their people, yeah, with the right tools and training to deliver on what they're expecting.
Yeah. And I think it's just on, and to your point, I think there's just so much, the LLMs just with all the bigger ones have done such a good job of marketing that now it's become from the leadership, and you even see it with now in the cloud space of now automation, DevOps. We need to implement more, modernize our approach instead of being on the portal within Azure or AWS. We want it automated now. We want our infrastructure to be built out. And there's so many steps to really building out a proper platforms. Ops, to your point, it's like, well, how does this get integrated in? Where are we looking at from an approach of, to your point, what I really like with Clyde, you built out a real UX to help the user come through and really showcase and to help guide them in that plan mode to help them to understand what is really the intent behind it. So what, from Clyde's side, I'm real curious, man, like what have you seen really from the questions that it's asked? Because you said the LLMs are not usually, you know, they're not targeting that. So is it just fine tuning, like what the actual problem is, and having the the user not think of things they did not think about? Like, how did you go through on building that out as the co-founder with Clyde? Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So a good example is a lot of times users will come with a problem, right? That they haven't really fully understood what the problem is, right? So they might come in and say, my sales process is broken, or I'm not closing enough deals, right? Or just something like that. And the first thing Clyde's going to do, if you type that in to Clyde, is Clyde's going to go, okay, what is this user really trying to solve? And then it's going to take you through a very guided sort of flow where it's going to try to understand, like, okay, so what's really going on with your sales process? Is it that a specific part of it that's broken? Are you trying to reduce your sales cycle times? Are you trying to increase win rates? You know, like, what's outcome are you trying to drive? And then it works with you in this way until, in collaborating with Clyde, you've come up with a really crisp challenge statement, right? That we can then jointly go solve for. And if you think about it, that is what, if you go hire a McKinsey consultant, that's what they're really, really good at, is they're really good at breaking down what's really the root cause here, what's really going on, and then developing a hypothesis that then gets validated. And, you know, you can go look at hypothesis-based consulting and how that all works. We've kind of embedded that into the framework of how Clyde guides the user. We also took it a step further in the collaborative side of things, which is that one of the biggest reasons teams fail to execute on strategic initiatives is that they don't have a shared understanding of the problem set before they go into solutioning and decision making. And so a lot of times you'll get groups that are making really important decisions and they all have a completely different understanding of what the problem is they're solving for. And so then the downstream implementation of any decision is huge, like just rot with change management issues because you didn't take the time to align on the problem. And so Clyde aligns both the individual on their problem and helps them figure it out. And then it goes a step further and makes sure that anyone that needs to be involved to solve that problem is also sort of aligned on a shared understanding.
So with that, on once they build out and as you're coming through in that regard, so as they're going through this entire life cycle of the approach, especially with, you said there's already been 1,500 users that have signed up. What have you seen on the engagement, on the adoption of Clyde AI, that how has the clients been taking it? Have they asked like new questions? Has it kind of come through from what you expected it, or what have you gotten on the feedback thus far?
Yeah. So some of the things have been highly expected, which is people really using it heavily in, I'll just call it the sales and solutioning part of the life cycle. So really using it to understand, you know, like client discovery, you know, doing a lot of like scoping work, like those types of things. And that I kind of expected to come out. Also, people are using it for things like design and understanding requirements and design decisions and things like that. Also kind of expected that. So some really unexpected ones though, which has actually led us to building a new release that's coming out in June, is people are also using it to solve just everyday strategic problems, not in the context of just like a project. And so we're getting people that are, yeah, I mean, go back to the third grade teacher, right? They're basically saying, how can I be a better teacher and have a better curriculum, right? We're also getting people that are coming from like healthcare, for example, and they're coming in and saying, hey, we have a really terrible way of knowledge management with our patients. How can we better deliver knowledge to our patients? And so I'm seeing a lot of, yeah, unexpected industries and questions that, yeah, I didn't see coming in the first sort of watch. I was expecting 99% just sales consultants. But yeah, that little 10, 15% of adjacent use cases was a pleasant surprise for me.
And I think this is just on, with AI kind of taking over, like really just ramping up just in the last year, man. Like, it's just been like, I wouldn't even say in the last year, since, I would say since December of about December of last year. I remember from the Super Bowl, it really kicked off. Like, now we're really seeing like advancements truly on production, like really showcasing it on production side. Now it's getting more enterprise grade. You know, they're figuring out the security. Now you see Microsoft came out with E7 with like licensing of Agent Force of the big thing of shadow IT, like how are people going outside to use chat? Like, how do they rein in, you know, how are you implementing on the roles of AI? So I love on Clyde's side of it, as we kind of go through it, is it just more on, do you think this is where AI just in the next 2 years, and where you even see Clyde yourself just on the consulting and just as you're sitting casing on different industries as well, is it just going to help more solve on the problem solving and really understanding the core aspect of for SOWs and everything, for statements of work, for the people that don't know of what's out of scope, what's in scope, you know, how is everything going to, like the roadmap? Do you think just people need more guidance on how the roadmap is going to be fulfilled for any engagement or with any other problem that they're seeing? Or what do you think this far?
I think it really kind of breaks down almost into two broad categories, right? And I'll just call it, I'm sure the analysts have a fancy term for it, but I like to think about it as specialist AI and generalist AI, right? On the specialist AI side, where you're talking about, for example, getting deep into SOWs and roadmaps and, you know, like how my dev team uses AI, which is like heavily advanced, right? And just, you know, microscopically tuned to every part of the workflow and like all these kind of things. I think that is interesting what you see a lot on like the, you know, the hype stuff, all the big LinkedIn influencer stuff that comes out. I feel like they focus a lot on the specialist AI users that have just really, really, you know, they're on top of all the news. They know exactly what's happening. The data shows that's like less than 1% of the total adoptable community. If you look at generalist AI, however, I think, now back to your question, I think one of the big challenges with generalist AI is that people just don't even know what they don't know on how to use this, how it can be useful, what part of their workflows it can apply to. And I think that if I think about my broad vision for Clyde is the specialists, they're going to tell me what they want. They're going to use it. They're going to, you know, I already have senior consulting leaders that have given me extremely good feedback on how to improve Clyde to support the consulting workflow very specifically. So I'm not that worried about the specialist users because they're just going to come on that journey with me and we're going to get there. I worry about the generalist AI users that need a lot more help and guidance and leadership. And I think that anyone that's building an AI native product has a leadership responsibility for this generalist population that needs to get the value from AI. And if you take it down to a personal level, right? Think about how many employees there are right now, whether it's in consulting, corporate America, or broader world, that wake up stressed out because they know they need to get on this AI train, but they don't know how. And they know that eventually they either need to use it or be replaced, you know, and all these sort of scary things. I think we need to help them, guide them. And that's really at the core of Clyde is really this philosophy and ethos of we need to help individuals and teams get to better outcomes proactively so that they don't have to do the burden of that emotional heavy lift of getting through that change journey.
And I think that the main thing and for audience, even myself, there's so much that comes out. Like Google's I/O just came out last week to showcase of the new Geminis and so forth. That's showcasing. It's such a rapid rate, Tim, like on just how much. So I'm sure for the business folks, for founders like you and me, and for other, you know, C-suite and for executives, it's where do we go? Because it rapidly continues. So where do the key thing is, where do we start with training AI, because there's so many certifications that are coming out now, and it's just overload. So to your point, what I like, what it sounds like with what Clyde is doing, it's really pinpointing in and really walking through piece by piece on what's the overall goal. So how does, for folks that are listening in it, in your recommendation and what it's done for you, how have you kind of stayed on train and blocked out the noise and like kept on, what are the signals that you're seeing?
Yeah. And I mean, this is something we actually embed heavily into Clyde, which is that, you know, one thing that Clyde does very well is, you know, one of the big frustrations of CIOs out there right now and individuals is that, you know, people don't know when to use which model for what. Right. And there's all these horror stories of everyone just using Opus 4.7 for everything. And it just burns like millions of tokens and spends out of control. What one thing that Clyde does and other AI native tools that are nailing this as well is because we are sitting on top of the workflows, we are training our tools and our models on when to use what. So the user doesn't have to make that determination themselves. So if you're using Clyde and you give it a problem, depending on what that problem is and where you're at in solving for that problem, what Clyde will do is it'll know, okay, now I need to go use 4.7. But for this thing, I can go use Flash, Gemini, or Haiku, or whatever it might be. And so taking a little bit of the burden off the user on having to be completely clued in on what to use when and where. So we're trying to natively do that in the product. Now, the other part of your question of how do I personally stay up to date and how do I personally sort of know what model is where? I mean, one is I do just listen to a ton of podcasts and I do stay up to date on all the latest releases and, you know, I'm all over that. But the other thing I do is I listen really closely to my team. My team is out there, especially the dev part of my team. They're out there using it every single day. They use it even more than I do. And they just through trial and error, like they get there and they just know on a weekly basis what's performing well and what's doing well. I would love it if anyone that's listening here has a way of giving me like everything that happened this week in AI, but digested in a way where I can rapidly change my workflows up. Like that's because I do spend a lot of time keeping up to date. So I think there is a gap there of just how do you stay in front of everything that's going on.
And it's crazy because, you know, even beforehand, you had OpenClaw was a big piece on OpenClaw and what it can be able to do. And then obviously, you know, OpenAI pulled in the creator. Now you're already seeing dispatch of Opus and the other LLMs of integrating OpenClaw into it. Now you hear Anthropic building out their own managed services. So they're building out the infrastructure for it. Now, you know, now you hear with the huge thing in June that now they're separating the public APIs from the max plans. And that's where it's going to be generating a lot more. It's going to make the tokens, to your point, a lot more expensive. But I think this is what we're seeing. And it's interesting, even in the agentic or even in the cloud space, it's just on because of like where the world is of data centers are now such a critical infrastructure now of making sure that you're not tied to one vendor. You know, that's what we're even seeing on our projects is, okay, we have AWS. Do we want to stay on AWS or do we want to have a backup region? Do we have anything for critical applications like healthcare or finance? Do we have it in Azure? You know, do we have a backup in case of AWS goes down for a little bit? That's happening more and more. Do we have something that's not shutting down production line? So I think that even in the agentic, like for the LLMs, I think that's the biggest approach because that's where you get tied down. And I'm real curious to see for your new release and how you guys are going to handle that. I'm figuring out the context. I think that's the biggest piece, the context management of when to switch between different models and utilization of the tokens, right? And then you have a think level as well. Like same with cloud code, like you have on max and maybe you just need it to low just on building out just maybe a plan in place. So do you think, like, as it kind of goes forward, that's the really key piece, is just context management and then being able to how to control the flow of tokens and so forth? Is that the big next goal?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of things there. So one, you know, I think you absolutely have to be multi-LLM, right? To be able to dynamically be able to switch. And especially now if pricing volatility starts to come in, right? And, you know, if Anthropic suddenly triples their, you know, API call costs and all that kind of stuff, you've got to be able to dynamically switch across LLMs. The other two things we're doing to future-proof our business is, you know, we're heavily experimenting now with things like open weight models, right? And which is kind of like the, it's the open source of AI, right? It's a world where if all these LLMs, let's just say they all 10x their costs overnight, there's a world where we would be able to switch to renting out our own GPUs and running open weight models ourselves, right? And actually not being dependent on the LLMs. I think a lot of people are thinking about that and piloting and experimenting on if that's feasible. And for a lot of our use cases, we're kind of surprised that some of these open weight models can actually support a number of use cases already.
Really?
Yeah. Because if you look at where the open weight models are going, I mean, they're training the open weight models on 4.7 Opus output, right? And so they're going to start catching up, and eventually things are going to be commoditized to the point where I do think you'll be able to run your own open weight models on your own GPUs that you're renting out. The other thing we're doing is there's this whole thing now around sovereign AI, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
So, you know, we have some, a small part of our customer base are really thinking about not using LLMs at all, and that they need to be able to, using LLMs, but not using the public LLMs, right? And that needing to be able to host, you know, their own LLM environments in a sovereign space. And so we're actually heavily experimenting with that as well. And I think there will be a future not too far away where if an enterprise wanted to buy Clyde and run it in a sovereign environment, I think we're going to get there. I think we're going to get there faster than a lot of people think, because, you know, responsible AI and AI trust, you know, there's a huge trust gap right now. I don't know if you talk to a lot of CISOs, but all of them are just livid with like the amount of security risk that's out there right now. And we need to be thinking about that as builders of AI.
The main conversation that you're seeing, I think even on Europe's side, I think they've gotten even fed up with Microsoft's side, because you found out that Microsoft was using their data. You know, with Europe, they have GDPR, they have their own data controls, and they found out Microsoft wasn't fulfilling to their standards. So it was a big, huge shift in that. We had to get adjustment, because we had one client that was in Germany that we needed to kind of, how do we migrate outside of Azure? Because, and then there's a whole big thing of when you migrate over, you know, Microsoft doesn't help, your cloud bills are going up. So you're hearing a lot of this. And it's to your point, I love that you brought this up, is sovereign data. Like, data now is so vastly important, how data centers are and brokers are pulling your data and being able to sell it. And now depending on what industry you're in, how do we keep that contained in, or even on the user side? So I think I do agree with you. Like, how do we, on the user, I think the consumer is really looking for that. And on the business side, is how do we build out a proper, easier way, a UI, a UX of how we can control our data, and how do we house it within, in making sure that we can control what comes in, what comes out, and what we're feeding the AI. I think that is a really, in the next few years, on something to internalize that for that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
With that, man, I'm just curious, because on the side, with Clyde AI, you said you're coming out with a new piece of in June, you know, with the new feature and so forth. What are you looking to see in the next, you know, 6 months, by the end of this year? What are your goals for Clyde?
So my goals for Clyde are, you know, in the short term, you know, I really want to empower and enable all the consultants out there that, like I said, are being asked to do things without the right tools. So I really want to, in the short term, just help enable that consulting workflow in the short term. Longer term could be closer than we think. It could be as soon as 12 months out. I really do believe in this idea of democratizing consulting and giving people access to expertise and, you know, world-class problem solving. If you look at an analog, there's a company out there called Lovable. I'm sure you've heard of it. It's a, you know, Stockholm.
Yeah, of course.
Stockholm based. Yeah. I'm Swedish natively, so I have huge respect for what Anton and the team are doing there. You know, what they started out is they started out enabling developers, right? And then they went from developers to enabling product people to just develop their own UXs, right? And now they've gone to a place where anyone's a developer, right? They've gone to this place where a third grade teacher could go build an app for their classroom, right? And so I would love to go on a similar journey where we start by enabling the consultant, but then ultimately we end up enabling consulting for just the world. It's sort of the grander vision behind it.
Yeah. And so with that, are you seeing within the next few years and with Clyde and everything else, what do you think is the next big milestone just in this realm of AI as it continues to evolve? Is that the next piece of it, as you would say, is just now empowering more? Or do you think the LLMs, as now we're kind of shifting through, you can see with Codex, you can see with Claude Code, you know, you have these now plugins, all the MCPs being able to connect to different applications. Do you think that's going to continue? What is your opinion on like where you see it in before the end of the year on the larger scale?
On the larger scale, what I do see is I truly do see the cryptization is such an overhyped tech word, but it really applies here, because what it's doing is it's going to allow any person on the planet to execute workflows that have traditionally been highly specialized, right? Whether that is development, whether it's consulting, whether it's design, whatever it might be. And so if you think about what that does, is it puts unleashed creativity in the hands of billions of people. And so I'm like really, really optimistic on the value that AI can overall contribute to the world. I think the leaders of the world, whether those are political leaders or business leaders, they have to make sure that it becomes a true democratization and doesn't become a value cash grab for a select few people that will end up benefiting from all of that value. So yeah, I think unfortunately democratization is the word to use, even though it's an overhyped one.
You know, and so as we kind of go through it from that, because I think you're right on it's enabling more on the consumers to be more empowered with it. What do you think are like the key metrics to really look for when you're actually finding out if you're really democratizing it? Is it just being able to have, you know, the agent give more context around where people are in, so it's able to figure out more of a pinpoint? Or do you think it's something else in terms of it, what we need to be looking for on the metric side?
So on the metric side, I think there's a couple important categories of it. One is the adoption side of the metrics, right? Which is that once this is truly enabled for the world, you know, my grandma should be able to use an LLM, right? Yeah. Very effectively. Yeah. So I think there's a broad adoption metric to look at. Then I think there's a value metric to look at, which is, are we actually doing things faster, better, cheaper, right? Are we actually getting the realization of value, either as consumers or as business leaders? And then I think there's a sustainability metric to look at as well, which is, are we able to deliver this sustainably and, you know, without using a gallon of water every time we're asking LLM a question, right? And are we able to solve for the scalability, both from a data center, energy consumption, cost, and that side of things? And I think that's where a lot of people are terrified of, you know, the AI bubble and that everyone's funding each other in this circle to make it all work. And so, yeah, I would say adoption, value, and then sustainable scalability would be kind of the three big, big metrics to kind of look at.
Okay. And so, you know, with that kind of ending off, because I know we're kind of close on time. So with it being, if you had that magic wand, man, like of Tim in the next few years, so is that, if you wanted AI, where you want to see AI to grow to, are those the key pieces of it? You would say if you had that magic wand, is that democratization, or would you add on to anything like really to what you want really AI to do for you or and for the business as a whole?
Yeah, if I had a magic wand, it would be for AI to deliver on the promises it's making to the world, which is a true natural way for us to interact with technology. And we're not there yet. We're going to get there. I hope to be part of that journey, you know, with Clyde. But to me, that would really be it. The true natural interaction with technology.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's, we're starting to see it now with the integration now with, even with Gemini now. I think you've even seen it to where now it puts on a full digitization and avatar of what you are. And now it gets into the pieces of data, like how much you know, but integrating with emails, what you've known. So it becomes a real digital representation of you. So it knows how he goes and so forth. So I think that is where it's headed. But to your point is there's still a lot of caveats and a lot of gaps in between. Yep. Tim, I've loved having you on. For folks that are coming in, because I'm already interested in kind of what I'm signing up for Clyde, and just really see on how it helps even for our solution architects and for our solution engineers, like when we have to come forward and do deep dive discovery calls and so forth. Where can people go to learn more about it that are listening in, that are really interested in seeing if it's a good fit? Where can they go on Clyde AI and then following you on your journey as they want to go through? How can they find you?
Yeah, so Clyde, you can meet Clyde at meetclyde.com. So just go to meetclyde.com. You can sign up. There's a free version. And you can just get started experiencing it. And then myself, I'm on LinkedIn pretty heavily. So Tim Lidman on LinkedIn. If you Google me, you'll find me. And then you'll also find a really talented young guy in the north of Sweden that writes music. And so you should check him out. but I'm the main business guy that's called Tim Lidman in the world right now. So you'll find me pretty easily.
All right, cool. And for the audience that are coming in, we'll make sure to have Meet Clyde. We'll have all of those links down in the on the bottom, so you can be able to go through, check it out, see if it's a good fit, and just, you know, look into it and see how it fits in along with you on your business as well. So, Tim, I really appreciate you coming on to the call, man. It was great having you. Really understand it, because I really liked it even from previously, just on the consulting aspect alone, just what you're providing in that context around it to help on the advisors and so forth, really kind of help with their B2B clients, you know. So that's what I was so interested on. But for those that are coming in, so thanks again for tuning in for the AI Advantage. We'll catch you next time on the next episode. Take care, everyone.
Thanks for tuning in to the AI Advantage. If this episode sparked an idea, share it with your network. Subscribe for more no-fluff conversations on how smart tech drives real outcomes. And if you're ready to future-proof your business, let's connect at salonox.net.